the Conversations with Authors podcast. I'm your host, Alison Thompson, aka the Proof Fairy. This podcast is a great excuse for me to have a chat with a published author about what inspires them to write, how they go about the writing process, and what effect it's had on their life. I also find out what great tips they have for other aspiring authors. My guest on the show today is award-winning international speaker, best-selling author, coach, and the UK's number one fear strategist, Keith Blakemore Noble. As I discover in our conversation, Keith first co-authored a series of four books called Winning in Life and Work, and then he published his own book, The Masks We Wear, in 2020. Keith, it's really lovely to meet you today.
Hey, Alison, greetings to Portugal from Scotland. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. So tell me about your books.
Oh, now that's a good question, isn't it? I've got five out at the moment, just to be greedy. Why not? So the first four are in their own series, Winning in Life and Work. It's a series of four books so far. There might be a fifth one on the way. Who knows?
But is that an exclusive? With each of those, have I got an exclusive here on that?
You have. I haven't actually told anybody about it. I suppose I'm committing to it now. those ones, I got other people involved as well, and I got them each to write chapters. We're not talking like three-page things. We're talking serious 20, 30-page chapters each. Mm. Obviously, I've got a chapter in each one, because if you're going to do it, of course you're going to put your own chapter in. And it published those over the course of several years. And then last year, because we're in 2021 now, aren't we? I have to lose track of time. Mm-hmm. Last year, I wrote and published my first solo book, The Masks We Wear. Nothing to do with COVID, I should point out. so that came out last year. So it's five books, I say so far, because there may be more in the Winning in Life and Work series. I've definitely got other books on the go at the moment. It's quite addictive, actually, isn't it?
Writing
and publishing books.
It is. So The Masks We Wear, you say nothing to do with COVID, but that's a very COVID-friendly title, isn't it, to come out in 2020? Can you tell me?
Yeah, sure. And in a way, the book did come about because of COVID, even though it's nothing to do with it. Sounds curious. I'll explain. So it's all about the metaphorical masks that we all wear as we go through life. And usually when I talk to people about the masks that they're wearing, they're going, "What are you talking about? I'm not wearing any masks," which is a common reaction. And that's actually the most dangerous kind of masks of all. It's the ones we've worn for so long, we don't even know that they're there. So the book kind of explores, what are these masks? Where do they come from? Why are they so harmful? How can we remove them? And what's life like once you've removed those masks? So that's the book in a nutshell.
I'm intrigued. I might have to go and get that now. That sounds
very interesting. There you go.
So what inspired you to start writing in the first place? With the kind of, I was going to say compendium books. I suppose they are kind of compendium books.
Call them that. That's as good a word as any.
And then your own book.
So growing up, I always loved writing. I used to love when we would write stories in English classes. That was kind of my favourite bit of it. I had a really wonderful imagination. I used to love writing, creating all these stories.
Yeah.
And when I was sort of young, early teens and so on, I sort of, one of my ambitions was to become a published author. I wanted to be an author. Kind of never really got around to it. Life got in the way and all sort of thing. But I still kind of thought, yeah, it would be nice to have a book. And so far, none of the books I've done are fiction. They're all non-fiction. So that aspect hasn't happened yet. But you never know, one day. But I was in an advanced training course, an advanced presentation course for training presenters, because as part of my journey, I trained in NLP, hypnosis coaching, and speaking, and also trained in training people in those. And it's the tools I use in my real job, as it were. So I was in an advanced presenter training course, And the instructor was taking us through various ways in which you can promote yourself and what you do and your message. Mm-hmm. And one of the things he said was, is a book. If you do a book, that can be a really good way, because basically it's gone from, oh, this is a person talking about something, to, yeah, I know about the topic. Hey, I wrote the book on it. Oh, okay. You've written a book. You must know what you're about.
It has that effect, doesn't it? You've written a book.
It does.
So you must be the expert in it. You must know what you're talking about. It's dangerous in some ways, but it's also really powerful. Yeah, as a kind of business tool, as a raising your profile, I think a book is one of the most powerful ways to do that, to exert yourself as an expert.
It absolutely is. And I mean, even when we know, well, hey, anybody could write a book, you've written a book, doesn't necessarily mean that. But even when we know that, and we're speaking with someone, and we find they've written a book about the topic, subconsciously we automatically raise them in our perception of them. Go, oh, okay, you've written a book, so you must know this stuff and you're serious about it. Oh, mm-hmm. Cool. So it really does have that effect. So yeah, that's one of the things he suggested. And then something else he suggested was, what he'd known somebody to do was, rather than write the whole of their own book, because it can be a lot of work in writing mm-hmm. a book, he said a friend of his got together with a group of people and they each wrote bits and they did the book together and they published it together. At that point, I thought, ooh, now that's an interesting thought. And during the break, I put a sheet up at the front. So, hey, if anybody fancies collaborating and we do a book together, pop your details down here and we'll sort something out.
Yeah.
And there were about a dozen people on the course. It's a small course, about a dozen on there. Everybody wrote their details down. I thought, oh, cool, a book's going to happen. And I then share the details around everyone. I was waiting for someone to lead and do the book. Days going by, nothing. Weeks going by, nobody's doing it. And I was thinking, but I want to be in a book. I want this to happen. Nobody's making it happen. Oh, I suppose I'll have to step up and lead and make it happen. Which back in those days, this would have been 2011, was very much not me. I would very much be the one. God, who's going to lead this? And I'll follow. Mm. So I kind of stepped and said, okay, well, let's organize it. Got everyone to actually write their chapters, and oh my word, it's like herding cats.
I can imagine, yeah, 12 people all writing, all with genders, all with different writing styles, all with their own schedules and lives going on. Trying to get exactly. together must have been difficult, yeah.
Bring it all together, but we got there. Got it together, and I researched into how we could self-publish, because we knew no way would a conventional publishing house take on something like this. They would only take it on if it's like groundbreaking or people who are already well established in their field, because mm-hmm. and that's understandable. So I knew we would have to publish it ourselves. So I did research, looked around into all the best ways for self-publishing. So we got the book done. We got it self-published. It was out there. Yay, Winning in Life and Work. Now, I decided to call it Winning in Life and Work, Volume 1. There had never been any plans for it to be anything more than just this one book. Mm-hmm. But something in my voice said, hey, let's call it Volume 1. Just kind of putting it out there that there could be more.
Yeah.
Got the book out. And at that point, I said to myself, I am never doing that again. God.
Too much
glad
work.
We got it out, but wow, God, all the hassle of trying to marshal all of these people. I'm never doing that again. About a year later, I started thinking, actually, it wasn't that bad. And it won't be so bad this time around, because I learned all the lessons there, made all the mistakes there, so I won't make mistakes. It'll be a lot easier. Let's have another go. So,
glutton for punishment. Eh?
Exactly. So, asked around, managed to get found more people who were interested in the idea, mm-hmm. partly because of the previous book and partly because they liked the idea. Got everyone together and we did a second book, Winning in Life and Work, New Beginnings. And it was an absolute nightmare coordinating everyone.
Was it harder than the first time?
No, I think it was. Because these were people who were at a slightly higher level in their game. So it was kind of even harder kind of marshalling and controlling. Oh, you said you'd get your chapter in by this point. And but we got it out. And I said, never again. Never again. So that one came out in 2014. The first one was 2012. Second one was 2014. 2015. I started thinking, well, I know I thought last time round we'd covered, learned all the lessons, all the mistakes. It turned out there were a lot more. But we've done it twice now. Got a good grounding in how this works. You know what? Let's get some people together and let's do it, because I can do it properly based on everything we've done. Let's do it again. So the third one, Winning in Life and Work, Success Secrets, came out in 2016. At that point, I thought, well, it was a bit of a nightmare, but it was a bit easier. I have no plans to write another book, but I'm not going to say never again, because I know exactly what will happen. If I say never again, it'll happen. So if I don't say that, we can quietly let it go.
Oh, dear.
And then, where it takes a strange turn, there was an online radio station that I was a presenter on. And the person running it sort of said, hey, I've got an idea. We've got lots of great presenters here. Let's get everyone contributing a chapter to a book and we'll publish it. Would you be interested in paying to take part? And I said, well, funny you should say that. I've actually done three of those, and I can coach people through how to, because as part of creating the books, it wasn't just write a chapter. I can coach people through writing it and all that sort of thing. I said, well, I'm not going to pay to be part of this book, but if we could maybe do a joint venture here, and I'll hand you get the people in, I'll handle the coaching and creating the book and publishing it, and we'll do a 50-50 profit split. And he said, yeah, that would be a great idea. So he did that, got lots of people in. They all paid him whatever the fees were. And then he went totally silent. And he went totally silent for about, this was for a good 6 to 9 months, totally silent. It's like, okay. And then we could see there was sort of trouble with the radio station. I was like, okay, he's one of those people.
Oh dear, bit of a fly by night.
But I was sort of thinking, my name's attached with this, and I don't want people thinking that I've done a runner with the money as well. Yeah. So I contacted all of them and said, look, here's the situation. This is what was agreed. I know you've paid him money. I don't know how much, because he's never told me any of the funds. I've received nothing from this. I know you folks are all down because you've lost money. If you're interested, let's get together. Let's still create this. I won't charge anything. I'll coach you all for free. All we'll do is, between us, we'll split the actual costs of publishing it, of getting it edited and published. So it'll be done at cost. I'm not going to make a penny out of this, but at least we get the book out. Now, some of them went, I've already put money. I'm not chasing more money. Is that, absolutely respect that. Yeah, not a problem. Some of them went, And some of them went, okay, let's do this. And out of that, Winning in Life and Work, Dare to Dream came out in 2018.
Okay.
So that was a good result from a horrible situation.
Oh gosh, yeah, not a nice situation, is it? But yeah, very. It sounds like totally the right thing for you to do, to kind of clear your name, even though you had you didn't have to clear your name. But like you said, you'd be
but
intrinsically linked with this whole scam. So that was a good way to correct the balance and correct the situation for all those people that had put money into this thing as well.
Exactly. Yeah. So we got a sizable book out of it in the end. So that was the four Winning in Life and Work books.
Okay.
And so much that I learned through all of that about writing a book, about layout, about proofing it, about editing, about actually publishing, turning it into paperback, turning it into ebooks, getting it into the distribution channels, all those sorts of things. Learned a lot through the process of doing the four of them. So the very first book, I basically hired a company, basically paid a company where you give them the manuscripts and they you pay them a lot of money and they do all the layout and all the publishing and everything for you. By the time of the final book, I handled the whole lot, did all the layout myself, contracts with printers and distributors and wholesalers, and got it into all the channels. So I learned a lot through doing those books, which was very, very interesting. Great stuff to do. I did at one point think, maybe I could turn this into some sort of a business, coaching. And I got connected with somebody else who was looking at doing business writing book coaching to coach people to do these things. And he said, oh, let's get together for a chat. Okay. He said, yeah, let's explore, see if we can do stuff. Sounds good. So we had a chat, and basically looking back on it, I now realized at the time I was just, hey, it's enthusiastic, great to chat about this stuff with someone. Basically, he was pumping me for all the information on how I did all of the stuff, and he then went off and set himself up. I was like, oh, okay, cheers, fine.
There really are some thoroughly unscrupulous people in the world, aren't there? The vast majority of people are lovely and genuine and kind and look out for each other, but there are some truly unscrupulous people around.
Oh, there are. But I it's like, oh, okay, I should have seen that coming, but yeah, there we go, good luck to you. He hasn't actually taken it very much further anyway, so it's like all of that didn't really do you much, but there we go. Then the pandemic came along, as we know, last year, and I live up in the northeast of Scotland, and there's a network organisation that I am of which I am a member. No, you are a member of the organisation as well.
Okay, that will be for networking.
I wasn't sure whether we were allowed to mention.
I've been involved with for networking since 2008, so I'm very happy to.
Nice. Yeah. Oh, brilliant! So yeah, so I was in for networking in their online community. Mm-hmm. But given where I live, way up in the northeast of Scotland, it was never really an option for me to physically meet, because the closest physical meeting would have been an 8-hour return trip by car. It's a long old way to go for a breakfast, I have to say.
Yeah, that's why I left for networking when I moved to Portugal. Same reason.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
It's just not feasible, but, really. Yeah.
But I said more than once to Brad Burton, he's the guy who founded For Networking. So I said to him, because I gradually got to know him over time, I said to him, hey, look, if there was any way I could get more involved with this, I would. Geographically, it's just not possible. Mm-hmm. And then then it's kind of just before the pandemic, toward the end of 2019, they started experimenting with an online-only version of it, just for people who couldn't physically get to one. Soon as they announced that, bam, I was in there. Apparently, I was the first person to pay and join up.
Ah, cool.
I always said I was going to get involved. So got in there right from the start, got involved right from the start as a team member, got involved right from the start doing, they call them foresights. If, for people who haven't been to For Networking, if you like all networking or like most networking meetings, there is a section where one member each week gets to talk for 10 to 20 minutes, depending on the network, to share some of their knowledge and content and so on. And I'd long been of the view that if you're in a room, who's the one perceived as the expert? It's the one on the stage.
Yeah.
So if you're going to be in a network meeting, do you want to be the one who speaks for 60 seconds? Hello, this is me. This is what I do. Thank you. Or do you be the one who talks for 20 minutes?
Okay. Yeah.
20 minutes, yeah. Obviously. So, like, yay! I'm gonna do these four. So, I did created a talk which I called 8 Powerful Words. And it was kind of based on two different early talks that I'd done earlier in my speaking career, and I kind of polished them, brought the two together, and it was part of it was talking about the masks that we wear, and it was leading up to 8 Powerful Words, which is once you remove them all and you start living life according to these 8 powerful words, life becomes so much more fulfilling. Okay. And that talk went down really well. And then the pandemic came along and the whole of For Networking went online. So there was lots of online meetings looking for lots of people to speak. Many people lots of people used to like to talk at the real world meetings. Most of them were kind of shying away from talking on Zoom meetings.
I know the feeling.
So I got lots.
I've done several Foresights when I was a physical member when I lived back in the UK.
Yeah.
I haven't done one yet, but I have booked one. So I do Foresights.
Excellent. Fantastic. Whereabouts?
Essex.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
But of course, online geography means nothing, does it?
So, online, anyone can attend. Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, good one. Good one. I shall look out for that.
Thank you very much. Yes.
Seriously.
But sorry, carry on.
So I got to deliver this Foresight several times, and I got other people were then going, "Hey, can you come and talk at our meeting? Can you come and talk at our meeting?" Which is always very gratifying, but it's always a good sign. And I was in one particular meeting, and one person private messaged me saying, "Hey, this will be the fourth time I've seen your talk." And I'm sort of messaging them out, going, "Oh God, I'm really sorry about that. I hope you still enjoy it." And they said, no. I actually booked into this meeting to hear it a fourth time, because every time I hear it, I get something new from it. It's really powerful. Thinking, oh, wow, okay. And people were starting to say, "Oh, that is a really good book. You know, you should write that. That's a really good talk. You should turn that into a book." Mm. I was thinking, nah, can't be bothered. No. But there's only so many times people can say, "Do this and I will give you money," before you go, "Okay, I will do the thing." it was during first lockdown. There was nothing to do. It was when we had the closest we've actually had to a proper lockdown, where you didn't go outside except for your one hour a day
walk or whatever it was. Yeah.
That was the thing. Yeah. So shopping, back in the days when we attempted to do a proper lockdown rather than the recent fiascos. Yeah. So I lots of time, nothing to do. I thought, you know what? Let's turn it into a book. Let's just see what happens. Because people, normally with a book, it can take a long time. I thought, you know what? Because I've learned all of the stuff from doing the other books. Mm. I've delivered this talk 20, 30 times, which means I have refined it and polished it. So, which is kind of like the editing process when you write your first draft of your book, and then you go through and edit it multiple times until you get sick to death of it. And then you edit it once more and it becomes brilliant.
Tell me about it. I'm writing a book at the minute, and I am on the first edit at the minute, and it's driving me potty because there's chapter edit, and then I think, no, it doesn't work. I've got to change it all back to how it was, and then it doesn't work. Yeah, it's frustrating. Yeah.
Oh, it is, isn't it? Mm. Right, so I thought, I've delivered this talk like 30 times, and I know how it's evolved, because I've consciously, deliberately evolved it based on feedback from people, based on the questions, based on which bits worked, which bits had to be explained a bit more. So it has been really polished. Maybe I could turn this into a book. So I sat down and I created the outline of the book, and I wrote the whole book, the whole manuscript. And then I kind of went through it again and went, there's not really much that I need to change with this. So that was quite a relief. And I had a lady who I'd hired as a proofreader for the previous book. Mm. I know her work is excellent. And after my experience of working with her with the first book, I said to her, "Any other books I write, you're my editor. You're my proofreader."
Yeah.
No question about it.
I think you find someone who works, you know, I have clients that have done 4, 5, 6 books, and they've come back to me every time because they know how I work. Mm. Yeah, once you find somebody that works, that you know how they work and it works for you, stick with them, definitely.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I told her what I was doing, and I was going to try and get this book out as quickly as possible to kind of ride on the back of the wave of the popularity of the talk. Mm. So she juggled some things around and got the proofing done really quickly. And I created all the layout. A graphic designer that I've got to know through for networking, whose style again I really like, and talked with him about the book. I had an idea. I knew what I wanted for the cover, but there was no way I could create it because I haven't got the skills for that. That's why I hire graphic designers.
Yeah.
Told him, so look, this is the kind of thing that I'm looking for. He went, "Okay, leave it with me. I'll create a draft and you can see what you think of it." He created it. I went, "That's the finished product. That's perfect." So the cover has been slightly tweaked, but it's pretty much as the original was, just slightly tweaked. Brought all this together and published it. So actually launched it in October of last year. So I think it was about 3 months from going, okay, I'm going to turn this into a book, until it was actually launched, actually published and physically available in paperback and in all major ebook formats.
Okay, yeah. Like, no, that, wow, that's pretty quick. That, but yeah, I guess like you said, because you knew you'd done the editing process, because you knew that talk so well and you'd done it so many times and you did it along the way, like you said, the better you know your content, the easier it is to get it down on paper. Yeah, and it sounds like it came out kind of perfect first time.
And that's the thing, because also it was based on two talks which had kind of evolved and grown and matured over the previous 8 years as well. So I think I mentioned in the foreword something along the lines of about how the book took three months to write and publish, but it was actually 8 years in development.
Right. Yeah. Which, the important thing there is I say to people, write what you know. Because when you know the subject, it comes really easily. I'm finding this with my own book. So I work with people, helping people to write and self-publish books. And I almost always use Amazon to publish the books. So I know how Amazon works inside out. So this is the bit I'm stuck on in my book. I've sat down and I've written the chapter about how to choose a publishing platform. And I sort of wrote loads about Amazon and what I saw as the benefits and how it works and how to do it. And then I wrote a little note, research other platforms. So I've done some research and I've added something in, but because I've never used them, because I'm not familiar with them, oh my word, it is so difficult to write about them. So I've got loads about Amazon and I'm kind of really struggling with the other bits. And I've just thought, you know what, I'm going to abandon this for now and edit the rest of the book and then do some more research and maybe even go and, you know, log into the sites and have a play around so that I know what I'm talking about. Because trying to write something that I don't know and I don't understand is... So knowing your subject, I think, is really important, especially for a first book. You know, it's, otherwise you just...
Oh, yes. Definitely. Write what you know. Don't overcomplicate it by having to research a whole new load of stuff. Mm. Just write what you know and enjoy. I think that's an important thing, is make sure it's something you enjoy.
Yeah.
Because that'll keep you going through. The book you're writing about, the different publishing and so on, it's not a topic for now, but let's catch up outside if you like, and I can share some experiences because I've used a couple of different publishing platforms over the time.
Do you know, I was actually going to say, you just said, you know, your book's available in paperback and for all the major ebooks. So how do you get published? Which platform do you use and why did you choose to go that way?
Great question. For the ebooks, I actually publish the ebooks onto the individual platforms myself.
Okay.
For most of them. So I've published it into Kindle on Amazon directly through KDP. On Apple's bookstore, I've got a publisher account with Apple Apple Books, publish it in the bookstore directly. Mm-hmm. I did the same with Barnes & Noble's for Nook, their Nook book.
Yeah.
It takes a little bit more time, but you have more control over it. The first time we did the book, we used a company called Lulu. They're fairly well known in the self-publishing. You basically give them a huge wad of cash and they do it all for you. Yeah. And they'll even have their own ISBN if you don't want to bother with getting your own ISBNs. Which means Lulu is the publisher.
Yeah.
And all the stuff goes to them and they then send you basically the royalties and such like. So I did that the first time because there is a lot to learn when you do it. But by the time I'd come to the fourth Winning in Life and Workbook, I was handling all of that stuff myself.
Right.
I wasn't using Lulu. I've got my own block of ISBNs. I'm a publisher.
Yeah. No, you are a publisher, yes. I think that's really interesting. If you're thinking of just printing one book, if it's just like a one-off thing, then using the Kindle assigned ISBN or the Lulu assigned ISBN, I think is absolutely fine. But if you're thinking of it becoming a series, I think it is much more professional, isn't it, to invest in them.
It is.
About £15-20 each. You buy a block of 10, don't you? Or you can buy them individually.
Yeah, you can buy one. Or
it's a
for
lot.
a few pounds more, you can buy one. For a few pounds more, you can buy 10. Or for about double the price, you can buy 100.
Right. So, I mean, if you're thinking of having a series, it ties them all together, doesn't it? And it gives you your own publishing and you can, it gives you more freedom with where you put them. And
It does. Of course, if you do ebook and paperback, you need two ISBNs. Mm-hmm. If you do ebook and paperback and hardback, you're going to need three ISBNs. Just something to bear in mind. Actually, even if you only ever do one single book, I don't mean one single copy, but even if you only publish one single title, I think there's still an argument for having your own ISBNs because of the credibility. Because if you get a book, you've got two people have written a book presenting themselves as experts in their field. One of them published by, we'll say Lulu, or published by random pay-to-publish company.
Yeah.
They're the publisher. The other one has the book. The publisher is their company.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, people aren't going to go, oh, wow, this book is published by that company, therefore it must be brilliant. It's not a thing that's going to double your sales or anything. But it's just all these little fine-tuning things which just add to the cash. It's like, oh, okay, huh. Because it suddenly seems like it's not, even though it is self-published, it's now almost seems as though it just kind of steps up that level. I mean, I actually use Be Your Change as the name of the publishing division of what I do. So it's not even my name, but it's a different. So it's almost as if it's a different publishing company. That wasn't done deliberately. That was because I changed the name of the company in between starting up and now. Okay. But I kept the Be Your Change name for the books. So I thought, you know what? That sounds nice. Yeah, let's just keep it for the books.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely something to think about, isn't it? It's most of the people that I work with, it's kind of not an issue. They're not worried.
Sure.
Amazon, it comes up as independently published. So it used to say creator-based. Yeah. Now it's independently published. But yeah, I mean, it is something that especially if you are looking to kind of be seen as an expert, like you said, it's another little thing that can differentiate you and your book from everything else. Yeah,
exactly. And even if people don't consciously realize it, they just kind of see that, and it's all kind of goes in at the unconscious level. Just helps them feel just that little bit warmer and that little bit more, I was going to say in awe, that's not the word, but a bit more, ooh, okay. It just gives it that little bit more authority there as well.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So I'm really interested that you actually published the ebook going directly to every writer. How do you do the print books? Who do you use for
that? So printing, I use a company that does printing and distribution. The company is Ingram Spark.
Okay, yeah.
Now, they can handle putting the stuff into ebook as well. It's not putting it into ebook. They can handle ebook distribution for you as well. And I have used them in the past for that. But this time around, I thought, you know what, I'm just going to, each time I do a bit more and a bit more and a bit more.
Yeah.
So this time I did it myself.
Because
once you set it up, it's not that much work to do it again yourself next time. So next book that I publish, because I've already got all those accounts set up, it's just going and here's the next one, hit go. But setting it up, it takes that bit of time. So I use Ingram Spark. They handle all the printing. And they can actually get the books as an extra optional service. They can handle distribution of the books as well. So they're my printer and my distributor, but they're not the publisher, but they're the printer and distributor. But what it does mean is, because I'm the publisher, they print, but if I decide I want someone else to print it, I get someone else to print it. I don't have to create a whole new ISBNs and everything. I don't have to change agreements. It's simply, here's the book in your format, go and print it. Unlikely to ever need to, but you've got that greater level of control there. It's my books. I own all of the stuff around it. I can have other people print it if I absolutely need to. So, I could put same book into create space on Amazon and have it printed through Amazon if it came to it, for example.
With your own ISBN number, it just gives you that freedom, doesn't it, to
To
print it in several different places, but all under the same publisher name. Yeah. Whereas if you
print it is important
Amazon first, or if you print it with the assigned Ingram Spark one, then you're kind of stuck with them. You have to.
Yes. Easy to move. Exactly.
Yeah.
I would say it is important to make sure that when you're looking for a printer, make sure you either they or you find a distributor, because you don't want to end up with boxes and boxes and boxes of books in your spare room and have to ship them out every time.
It's not that long ago, is it? It's probably only 15-20 years ago that was pretty much the only option, wasn't it,
for self-publishing?
You paid for 20,000 copies of your book to be
printed. Yeah.
And it was down to you what you did with them. And I bet there are still a few garages that have boxes of books.
I imagine so, yeah.
The whole print-on-demand revolution.
Oh, it's
so much easier to be able to publish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So what have you learned about yourself through writing, through collaborating and through writing your own book?
I mean, for me, the biggest thing I learned for doing the four books was all the technical back end. How the heck do you take this and turn it into a book that's there on the bookshelves and there on people's Kindles and so on? So massive learnings on that. I also learned quite a lot about managing teams of people. Now, I'd managed teams of people in the past. Previous career, I worked in IT and I had teams of people and so on. But that's a very, very different thing. You're all together and you're working with a common aim and all this sort of thing. With the book, everybody's coming in with different ideas and coming in from different backgrounds. Yeah. And I remember that one thing which almost derailed the first book, it got so big, was it turned into a massive heated debate amongst several of the contributors, was the image on the front cover. And it's not even as if it was an image of one of us. It was a line drawing image.
Yeah.
And there was just this massive argument about what to most seemed like the tiniest, most insignificant thing, but for a couple of people, clearly it had a lot of much deeper significance, and it was triggering a lot of other stuff. Stop me if I'm getting too technical here, but it was it had a lot of hidden deeper. It, as with so many things, when there's a robust discussion, it's never the thing, it's the thing behind the thing that's actually causing it all. But that was fascinating, and just being able to find a way to come up with a compromise solution that was acceptable to everyone. I mean, it's hard enough. I mean, I think there were 11 of us in the first book. It's hard enough getting 11 people to agree on anything, but especially when there's strong differences of opinion on something, finding a way to navigate around that and bring a solution that works for everyone. That was a surprising learning.
Is the book that's out now, does it have that controversial cover image on it, or did you change it for something else?
Well, no, we came up with some. We managed to get a tweak and adjust it in a few ways, which meant it was felt acceptable by everyone.
Okay.
It's not even controversial as such, but it was for some people that the meaning they associated with what was on the cover was bringing up lots of other stuff for them. And I don't necessarily, may or may not agree with the position they were or the argument they were presenting. I can absolutely understand how they came to that position, though. That was fascinating. Looking back on it, it was frustrating at times. at the time, but it was fascinating looking back on it.
Yeah. What about your own book?
Also, I was going to say the other thing I learned was about the importance of clarity in communication. Because you give 12 people, these are the steps, this is what we need from you, these are the dates, this is the format. Give that to 12 people. You get things done in 12 completely different ways, all of which meet exactly what you've said, but none of them are exactly what, none of them are close to what you wanted. It's like, oh, okay.
Oh, isn't that interesting? That, yeah, just how we all interpret things. We all bring our own baggage to everything. We all bring our own perspectives.
We do, yeah.
So even something that seems quite straightforward on paper, we actually can interpret in very different ways. That's really interesting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And then with what did I learn about myself with my own book? That is an interesting question, isn't it? I think one of the things I learned was that I can actually create this in a much shorter time than I thought I could. Because when I first set out, I thought, oh, there's no way I'm going to get the book out this month, this year. It's going to be into 2021. But when you know your stuff and you trust yourself to know your stuff and you just go with it, you can create far more rapidly than you think you do. Because as it goes back to what you said earlier, write about what you know.
Yeah.
Write about what you know. And even though I delivered the talk many times, writing it down, saying something is one thing, communicating via speech is one thing, communicating via writing is a very different medium. I've heard it said before, I would agree, spoken word and written word are actually two different languages. Spoken English and written English are two different languages. They have the same words in them, but they're different languages. And you can tell if you were to dictate your book, if I'd just taken one of the talks and just had that transcribed verbatim, published that as the book, it would be like, God, this is awful. And you get...
Yeah, I was going to say, though, did you not think about dictating it? I mean, you can dictate it and then you can kind of edit it. Did you not think about dictating it and using that as a basis?
I thought about that and I did that for the first chapter and then I went, God, this is awful. I'm ending up spending more time rewriting it than I would be just to actually write the thing.
Oh, okay, yeah. Because I mean, I know some people do, yeah, I have a couple of clients who do dictate.
Oh, yes, books. Yeah.
Yeah, and it works really well for them, but it's fine. It works for you, isn't
Absolutely.
It? Everything, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've known of people who do that exact approach. They dictate it and then they polish up. I thought, I'm going to do that because that'll be easier. But did the first chapter and then, oh, no. By the time you edit it and polish it, it's like, I could have just written this from scratch in far less time.
Right,
And it's also just enjoy the process as well. Enjoy what you're doing. And, I mean, for me, what I found really worked really well is, and no surprise, or it should be no surprise to me that it works well, because it's how I've taught people to create talks and to create courses and all these sort of things. Create your overall outline structure so you know where you're going, and then you can add in the detail and fill in as you go through. Because when I used to write all those stories, I used to write back at school, I would start writing and see where it went. It was almost as much fun for me discovering where the story was going as it was writing it, because when I wrote them, I had no idea where it was going to go, which can be interesting. It can also lead you into all manner of trouble as well.
I think with fiction, if you're writing fiction, that's some people do plan fiction out to the nth degree.
Yeah.
But a lot of people do just have a kind of basic, this is kind of where it's going and I'm going to start writing and the characters are going to take over and we're going to see where it goes. And I think for fiction, does work. But when it's non-fiction, you do kind of, if you have that structure and
you need to know,
bring into each chapter, it makes it so much easier. Yeah. Yeah,
exactly.
So you know what's going in the chapter, and you know your content already, so then you can just write it. But you're not thinking, what I'm writing now.
It also has the advantage of it helps you avoid that sitting in front of a blank page for 3 hours trying to think what to write. The chapters are grouped into three different groupings, which was a logical way of doing it. And then within each group, there's five chapters covering five key points within it. So by the time I came to actually writing it, it was basically, right, I had 15 pages, one chapter title per page. Sit, what am I going to do? I can't really think anything about this one right now. Ah, this chapter title. Yeah, that resonates with me today. Write it out.
Yeah.
Or if you're having trouble writing it out, take that chapter. Okay, I've got this chapter. What are 7 key points that I need to cover in this chapter? What are the key points? Where do I need to be by the end of the chapter? And again, just do that mini breakdown and then go in and fill those out.
No, that's right. Planning, having that sort of plan is really useful. And I think something else you said there as well, I think is a really good tip. You don't have to start on chapter one and work your way through chapter 12 or whatever.
Exactly.
Especially, you know, like you said, if you're not feeling it for one chapter, well, leave it, go on to another one. And come back to that when you're when you've done a bit more research, or when you're feeling in the mood for it, or
Interestingly, I've found, and this has now been true for every book that I do now, the very last piece that I write is the introduction.
Yes, I haven't written my
introduction
yet. I started and I was like, how can I introduce what I don't know about? I haven't written the book yet, so
Yeah, because so many people think, right, I'll start with the introduction and then the first chapter and work my way through. No, the introduction is the very last thing that I write, because by that point, you now know what the whole book is.
Yeah.
And you can, and the introduction almost writes itself by that point.
Yeah. Because you're kind of going through, well, this is what I'm going to be telling you, isn't it? That's what the introduction is. This is what this book's about, and this is who it's for, and I'm going to tell you blah, 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 blah. And how can you say that until you've written blah, 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 blah? You can't do it.
Exactly.
I wonder how many people have decided to write a book and have written, you know, introduction, and then that's as far as it's ever got. That would be so sad if people have actually got stuck at that point and never. That's really interesting. That's something that I was just writing in my book about a whole section about the introduction. Don't start with it. Don't start with the introduction, because you're stuck. So, that's really interesting.
It's like when I'm teaching people how to create a talk or to create a speech. Don't start with the opening. The bit we always start with when we're writing it is the finish. The opening is usually the last or possibly second last thing we write. The last then being the title. Titles kind of suggest themselves once you've written it.
Yeah.
But the opening is the which finds the last thing that you write, because you now know what you're opening into, and it's like, hey, here's how I can give a ta-da! Grand opening to the thing. A friend of mine who writes fiction in a few genres, but particularly horror, he's really good at horror, very scary, very scary stuff he writes. done some stuff for Doctor Who as well. You can certainly see the crossover in what he's writing there. But he told me that for a couple of his books, he writes the whole lot, and then he basically deletes the first two chapters.
Okay.
It's like, wow. Because the first two chapters kind of set things up, and then as you're going through it, you're still referring to bits and bringing bits from the beginning. Because so often the first couple of chapters are kind of boring as you're setting the framework for it. So he then just, bam, it starts. Yeah. Chapter three is basically becomes chapter one. You're right in the action. Because the first two chapters are more for him to get clear in his head.
Yeah.
All the background.
This is so-and-so. They're a whatever from wherever. And they're 6 foot tall. And this is so-and-so. And they work in a bank. And this is a monster. And he looks like this. Yeah, I can kind of see where you're coming from.
Yeah.
But actually, make a book work. The scene sets itself, doesn't it? You don't need to set.
Yeah.
So set the scene and then get into the story. And then that's really interesting.
Yeah.
I love that.
So it gets rid of those first two chapters, then reads through the book again and just adds in at the relevant points, bits that need to be mentioned, which would have been in the earlier chapters, just to clarify what's going on. And the books then basically just grab the reader right from the very start. Because when you think about James Bond films, where do they start? Smack bang in the action.
That's a really good tip. I'm planning on writing my first novel, my second novel, but my first proper novel later this year. I will bear that one in mind. I think that sounds really interesting. So
I mean, think what George Lucas did with Star Wars. Star Wars was actually episode 4.
Well,
bam, you're right in the middle of what's going on.
So he says. I've always wondered if it was actually episode four, if he actually did have three lined up, or if he just said that afterwards. But yeah, who knows?
I've seen some of the stuff about what he'd written in the past, because I grew up with Star Wars, so I used to consume all this stuff voraciously, and it does look as though he didn't actually have three whole films written, but he had kind of like the backdrop to the story.
Okay.
And they said, right, bam, we'll start here, building on that backdrop, which I'm not telling anybody else the backdrop about, but bam, here we go, straight in with the action. And then
decided to go back and make films that covered the backstory. Yeah.
Interestingly, his plan was he would do Star Wars and possibly another film. And then other people would take up the mantle and do the other stories. And he was hoping somebody else would take up the mantle and do the prequels and do sequels, and nobody ever did. So in the end, he went, "Oh God, well if the story was ever going to get out, I suppose I have to make them."
I bet he said never again after the first film as well.
Quite probably.
never again. So Keith, so with the four books and then the new book,
The Masks We Wear.
The Masks We Wear, that's the one. I was trying to come out with masks as the first word and that wasn't working. The Masks We Wear. What has anything happened to you as a result of publishing them? Have they kind of raised your profile? Have they set you up as the expert, or has anything interesting come along?
For the Winning in Life and Work books, not anything that I can directly attribute to them, but it has helped, and I'm glad I did them, partly because it meant when I did my own first solo book, it was all so much easier because I didn't have to learn all this other stuff. It was simply, okay, let's just write the book and away we go, because we know how it all works. It has helped in that when I published that book, there are so many people these days who publish books and go, "Hey, here's my book." Like, "Oh, okay, yeah, nice, well done." When I came to publish, it was like, "Hey, I'm just publishing my fifth book." And people go, "Oh, fifth book? Oh, okay."
That's like and top author because, status, isn't it? That's
because we got bestseller on the previous books. One of them was an international bestseller because we got number one in three different countries at launch. So when I'm an international best-selling author, this is my fifth book, it's like, oh, okay. So that got me, enabled me to get more attention around the launch of book five.
Right.
And it's something I've noticed, actually. Once book five came out, because I've done all this stuff, I've got my Amazon author profile. Anybody who's an author, you should absolutely have your Amazon author profile. Why not? It's Amazon basically saying, "Here, have some space on our highly popular website to tell everybody about you." I've got my Goodreads profile, which is it gets much less traffic, but for people who are really into books, Goodreads tends to be the place they go to find, as it says, to find your next favorite book. So I got those, which means when people get The Masks We Wear and they go and check out who the author is, they see these other books. I've now seen an uptake in sales on some of the previous books as well. So that's been... So the royalty checks are still not enough to retire upon, admittedly, but seen an increase in the royalty checks over the past year. It's like, oh, that's nice. So people are still getting the older books and getting the messages in them.
Right. So and do you think they're coming to you via the new book, The Master And then thinking, oh, I like his writing style. What else has he done? And then going back
What else is there? Yes.
Do you cross-promote the books? Have you got... Do the books all reference the other books, you know, in the end? Do you have
Yes. So at the end of, obviously at the end of the first Winning in Life and Work book, there's nothing about any of the other books because they didn't exist at that point, and they never would exist. In each of the subsequent Winning in Life and Work books, at the back, there's a page about each of the other individual books.
Yeah.
So I mentioned... I did do that in The Masks We Wear, and then I looked and I thought, no, that doesn't really fit. It felt like it was almost cheapening it. It felt like it was almost, hey, buy this. You've read this. It's nice and uplifting and emotional. And now buy all this stuff. It felt just, but what I have done, And this isn't going to work because this is audio only, but you can see it in the front. It lists all of the the other books and mentioned.
So they are
in
there
front.
Somewhere.
So
yeah.
They're listed in there so that people can go, we'll check out the other stuff as well. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, if somebody's got your book, of course, absolutely mention any other publications you've got, because it's they're reading your book. If they're reading it and they're looking through to see what else there is, they're interested in what you've done. They want to know more. And if they then see, you've got some other books.
Yeah,
that's a cool, low-cost way for them to get more about you. Rather, because sometimes people go, I mean, I have seen in books, they go, hey, if you like this stuff, get in touch with me, book a strategy session, let's have a call. It's like, whoa.
That's a bit, slow down a bit.
Yeah. But if it's like, hey, if you like this, check out my other books. You know what? Yeah, I can do that. I can get those other books, check them out. And then at that point, they can go, you know what? I'm ready. Let's have a date. Let's have a chat.
Yeah.
So it's that whole thing when you meet someone, you don't ask them to marry you the first minute you see them. You don't ask them out on a, hey, let's go away for a lovely weekend. It's fancy coffee.
Yeah. So have
I do get people saying, oh, have you got any other book? Are you working on any other books? So it's like, okay. So there's interest there. There is interest, which is always nice to hear.
So have you found that you have got more business as a result of the books? You know, have people come after reading them? Yeah.
Oh, yes, yes. I mean, I've had people contact me directly as a result of the books. Also, I've had people ask me to come to their network meetings and do the talks as a result of reading the book, because I kind of retired that talk because there's only so many times you can deliver it within the network before everybody's heard it. So
I somehow missed it. I don't know how, but the book is
So I do various other talks now. I've got 6 different ones that I offer because, hey, I still want to be there, but just not going to say the same thing every time. But I recently I had someone saying, I have read your book. Can you come and do a talk about it? Because I mentioned in the book how it evolved from the talk. So someone did say, can you come and talk at our meeting, which I did, and made a couple of new connections through that, which wouldn't have happened had it not been for the book. So
right.
I mean, a book isn't, by it in and of itself, a book isn't going to make you rich as a general rule, and you'll know that. But it's somebody once described it as a very expensive business card.
It is,
Opens doors. That opens doors, and it's how much money you get from writing the book, but it's the opportunities that having that book creates for you.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like suppose you've written a book about particular types of processes that can really help a company, because you train companies in using those processes, and you want to get in with a particular company to offer them, you could phone them up and try and sell your services. Like, go away. Or send a signed copy of the book to the CEO. Hey, thought you might like this, particularly chapter 3. You'll find that really interesting for your company. People love lumpy mail.
Yeah.
The lumpy mail is going to get past the gatekeeper.
Yeah.
The PA is going to go, pass that on. The CEO will read it. Now, the CEO isn't going to be the one who calls unless it's a small company, but they may go, actually, I like this. Bob, take a look at that. See what you think. Get in touch with that guy. See if he can help us out. It gets you past the gatekeepers and it opened all manner of doors. It's never a guarantee.
No. But I mean, part of my book looks at I wrote a book about raising a child with ADHD, and I wrote it just because I wanted to write a book. I always had done. And I wrote about what I knew. It was like, what shall I write about? Oh, well, I've been raising this kid with ADHD for the last 30 years. Let's write about that, you know? And I wrote it solely because I wanted to write a book. And I thought, if one person can be helped through reading my experience, then that's it. That's all I want to get out of it.
Yes.
But what I can remember a friend of mine who I've also interviewed, Lisa Cherry, she's also an author, and she said, be prepared for life to change when your book comes out.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you know, I'm self-publishing this book. My mum will buy it. A few friends will buy it. You know, I'm not expecting anything great from it. But I ended up speaking in front of 300 educational professionals. I ended up speaking at Manchester City's football stadium at a conference.
Yeah.
I ended up on TV. I ended up running courses. I ended up developing my whole business. All this stuff came just because of this book. So I think if you
absolutely
can just put a book out there and that's as far as it goes and you're happy with that. But if you want it to go further, yeah, it does open opportunities, and it's amazing. You can take it as far as you want to go. You really can. So, yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I've used there's been a couple of things where people charity events, and they were looking for donations for auctions. So I thought, well, I could give you my bundle of five books if you like. I mean, yeah. Costs
signed,
20,
I hope.
20 quid to have all five.
Yeah.
So, oh yeah. So I'll even scribble on them if you really want my name on there. But they go, wow, five books, yeah. And because you've donated five books, it gets on the thing. People check it out. You get a little blurb about you. I have had people get in touch with it because they've seen it there. They didn't necessarily buy the book, but they saw me. They go, oh, I didn't know you could do that sort of thing. Hey, can you help me with X, Y, and Z? Absolutely.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's can help.
Really interesting. So really interesting where it goes. I've just looked at the time and realized how long we've been talking for. So I think we probably need to wrap this up now because, hopefully listeners will have enjoyed this conversation as much as I have and won't have kind of switched off halfway through. It's been absolutely fascinating talking to you today, Keith. Before we go, though, I need to know, what is next for you? Have you got plans for any more books? Maybe a novel?
Yes.
Who knows?
Well, a novel would be grand. Although that said, writing a novel is a very different style and a very different skill from writing nonfiction.
Yeah.
And I would still like to write a novel, but I'm thinking a novel is kind of more going to be the thing I do in my retirement.
Okay.
Because I'm sort of thinking it's two very different skills. I still have other nonfiction books to write. At the moment, I would love to write a novel. So I'm kind of building up. I've got a few ideas actually for bits of the overall story.
Yeah,
it'll happen at some point, but don't hold your breath. It won't be for a while. But
okay,
yeah, I do still intend to write that. Mm. And at the moment, I am actively write, and this is crazy, and it goes against everything I ever tell anyone who asks for advice about writing a book. I'm actually writing three books at the moment. They're not all going to come out at once, but all three of them have said, hey, we need to be written. Okay. So they're in various stages of development, and I know which one is going to come out next.
Okay.
The aim is for it to come out early next year. I'm not going to say any more about it, but
that's absolutely fine. Yeah.
That is going to be quite a significant one. I believe. I've spoken to two or three trusted confidants about it, and they've all gone, oh my God, you have to get that book out. So yeah, wow. There you go.
Watch this.
And I've got
early
one
next year.
Yes. I've got one other idea for a book which is kind of self-help personal development, but written as fiction.
Okay.
So that is going to be an interesting one. Mm. Basically, lots of allegory and metaphor and so on.
Okay. And when you said writing books is addictive, you weren't wrong, were you?
I know.
Wow.
I know.
It's really impressive. Really impressive. It's been absolutely wonderful to talk to you today, Keith. Thank you so much for being a guest on the show. Where can people find out more about you online?
Best place is if you go to my website, which is Keith Blakemore Noble, all one word, keithblakemorenoble.com. You'll find out about all the stuff I do, and you'll find the books there as well. Or I'm on all the main social media platforms, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, Pinterest, all those sorts of ones with the profile name, Keith Blakemore Noble. Or put Keith Blakemore Noble into a search engine, because I'm blessed to be the only person on the planet with this name. So whatever comes up, good or bad, it's me. I can't hide behind and say, no, that's someone else. It is all me.
Fantastic. A unique name. That's quite something. My dogs have just started barking, which I think means it's time to end the podcast. So thank you so much for being a guest on the show today, Keith.
Thank you so much, Alison. Thank you.
Being my guest on the show today. You can find out all about him and his books on his website, www.keithblakemorenoble.com. I'll put the links in the show notes. If you're feeling inspired to pick up a pen and write your first book, then I would love to help you. Visit my website, www.theprooffairy.com, where you can download a workbook and book a free call with me. You'll also find all the episodes of this podcast there, and if you're already a published author, you'll find out how you can be a guest on the show. If you've enjoyed this podcast, then please subscribe, share it, rate it, and tell your friends about it. There'll also be a special shout out on the show for anyone who leaves us a review. This has been a Proof Fairy production in collaboration with the dogs, who decided to join in just at the end there. I'll be back next week with another inspiring interview with another amazing author. Bye for now.